9 degrees in Plymouth, Stornoway 6 Celsius, but where it snows, it'll be closer to zero. So winter weather certainly on the way.
Thanks a lot, Thomas. Now on BBC Radio 4, Book of the Week. In the world until yesterday, Professor Jared Diamond explores the ways in which traditional societies can provide unique, often overlooked insights into human nature. In today's extract, he looks at how such societies can teach us positive ways of dealing with our ageing population. The reader is Crawford Logan.
While I was visiting a village on the Fijian island of Viti Levu, I fell into conversation with a local man who had visited the United States, and he told me his impressions. There were some features of American life that he admired or envied, but others that disgusted him. Worst of all was the treatment of the elderly. In rural Fiji, old people continue to live in the village where they have spent their lives, surrounded by their relatives and lifelong friends. They often reside in a house of their children, who take care of them, even to the point of pre-chewing and softening food for an old parent whose teeth have been worn down to the gum line. In the United States, though, my Fijian acquaintance was outraged that many old people are sent to retirement homes where they are visited only occasionally by their children. He burst out accusingly to me, "You throw away your old people and your own parents." Among traditional societies, some accord their elderly even higher status than do Fijians, allowing the elderly to tyrannize their adult children, to control the society's property, and even to prevent young men from marrying until their 40s. Others accord their elderly even lower status than do Americans, starving or abandoning or actively killing them. How can we account for the wide variation among societies in their norms for treating the elderly? Part of the explanation involves variation among societies in material factors that make the elderly more or less useful to the society and that make it more or less feasible for younger people to support their elderly. The other part involves variation among societies in cultural values. In what sorts of society do children neglect, abandon, or kill their parents? The many reported cases involve societies for which old people become a serious handicap, endangering the whole group's safety. This situation arises under two different sets of circumstances. One set applies to nomadic hunter-gatherers who must shift camp from time to time. Without beasts of burden, the nomads have to carry everything on their backs. To add to that load, old or sick people unable to walk at all is difficult or impossible. The other set of circumstances arises in environments, especially Arctic regions and deserts, where severe food shortages periodically occur, and where food surpluses large enough to carry the group through the period of shortage cannot be accumulated. If there isn't enough food to keep everyone fit or just alive, the society must sacrifice its least valuable or least productive members. From a cold-blooded, adaptive perspective, societies in which old people do remain useful will tend to prosper if those societies care for their elderly. People eventually reach an age at which men can no longer spear to death a lion, and women can no longer trot miles with a heavy load to and from the Mongongo nut grove. Nevertheless, there are other ways in which older people can continue to obtain food for their grandchildren. Men of the Aceh, a South American Indian people, continue to hunt and gather into their 60s by concentrating on small animals, fruit, and palm products, and breaking trail when the band shifts camp. Among the Kung of the Kalahari Desert, older men set animal traps, gather plant food, and join younger men on hunts in order to interpret animal tracks and propose strategies. Among Hadza hunter-gatherer women of Tanzania, the age group working the hardest consists of postmenopausal grandmothers who spend, on the average, 7 hours a day foraging for tubers and fruit. The more time that a Hadza grandmother spends foraging for food, the faster her grandchildren gain weight. Another service that older people can render, even past the age of digging tubers 7 hours a day, is babysitting. That frees up the older person's children and children-in-law to spend more time foraging unencumbered for their own children, the grandchildren of the older person. Old people can make things for their grown children to use, such as tools, weapons, baskets, pots, and woven textiles. For example, older Samang hunter-gatherers of the Malay Peninsula were noted for making blowguns. This is an area where the elderly not only try to hang on to earlier abilities, but are likely to excel. The best basket makers and potters are often older people. Traditional midwives and medicine men are often old, as are magicians and priests, prophets and sorcerers, and the leaders of songs, games, dances, and initiation rites. Older people enjoy a huge social advantage insofar as they have spent a lifetime building up a network of relationships into which they can then introduce their children. Political leaders are usually older people, so much so that the phrase tribal elders has become virtually a synonym for tribal leaders. That remains generally true even in modern state societies. If we want to ascertain some fact, we look it up in a written source, or else online. But that option doesn't exist for a pre-literate society, which must rely instead on human memories. Hence, the minds of older people are the society's encyclopedias and libraries. Time and time again in New Guinea, when I am interviewing local people and ask them some question to which they are unsure of the answer, my informants pause and say, "Let's ask the old man," or "Let's ask the old woman." Thus, much of the reason why societies do or don't care for their aged depends on how useful old people are. Another part of the reason depends on a society's values, whether old people are respected or scorned. Obviously, these two reasons are related, but some societies emphasize respect for the aged more than do other societies that appear economically similar. At least some respect for old people seems widespread among human societies. In the modern United States, a relatively mild form of respect coexists with some attitudes of devaluing. American children are often told to respect their elders, not to talk back to them, and to give up one's seat on a bus if one sees an old person standing. Among the Kung, respect for old people is stronger, in part because there are proportionately far fewer old Kung than old Americans. Barely 20% of Kung born reach the age of 60, and they deserve admiration for having survived lions, accidents, diseases, raids, and other dangers inherent in the Kung lifestyle. But care for the elderly goes against all those interwoven American values of independence, individualism, self-reliance, and privacy. The cruel reality is that old people eventually reach a condition in which they can no longer live independently, cannot rely on their own abilities, and have no choice but to become dependent on others and to give up their long-cherished privacy. Dependency is at least as painful for the elderly person involved as for the middle-aged child who watches it happening to a formerly self-reliant parent. How many listeners have known an elderly person who insisted, out of self-respect, on trying to continue to live independently until an accident made the continued independence impossible? American ideals push old Americans to lose self-respect and push their younger caregivers to lose respect for them. Compared to the status of the elderly in traditional societies, what has changed today? The good news is that in the first world, older people enjoy on the average much longer lives, far better health, far more recreational opportunities, and far less grief from deaths of their children than at any previous time in human history. Offsetting that good news is much bad news, some of it a straightforward consequence of demography. The ratio of old people to children and productive young workers has soared because birth rates have dropped while survival rates of the elderly have risen. We used to have lots of young people and few old people, but at present we have lots of old people and fewer babies. One obvious negative consequence of those demographic facts is that society's burden of supporting the elderly is heavier. That cruel reality lies at the root of the looming crisis of funding the American Social Security system and its European and Japanese counterparts that provides pensions for retired workers. If we older people keep working, we prevent our children's and our grandchildren's generation from getting jobs. If, instead, we older people retire and expect the earnings of the shrinking younger cohort to continue to fund the Social Security system and pay for our leisure, then the financial burden of the younger cohort is far greater than ever before. And if we expect to move in with them and let them privately support and care for us in their homes, they have other ideas. One wonders whether we are returning to a world where we shall be reconsidering choices about end of life made by traditional societies, such as assisted suicide, encouraged suicide, and euthanasia. I am certainly not recommending these choices. I am instead observing the increasing frequency with which these measures are being discussed, carried out, and debated by legislators and courts. The status of old people in modern Western societies has changed drastically within the last century. We're still grappling with the resulting problems, which constitute a disaster area of modern life. On the one hand, people live longer, old people enjoy better physical health, and the rest of society can better afford to care for them than at any previous time in human history. On the other hand, old people have lost most of the traditional usefulness that they offered to society, and they often end up socially more miserable while physically healthier. Most of you will face or already have faced these problems, either when you have to figure out what to do with your own aged parents or when you become old yourself. What can we do? My suggestion is to understand and make use of the changes in people's strengths and weaknesses as they grow older. At the risk of overgeneralizing about a vast and complex subject, one can say that useful attributes tending to decrease with age include ambition, desire to compete, physical strength and endurance, capacity for sustained mental concentration, and powers of novel reasoning. Conversely, useful attributes tending to increase with age include experience of one's field, understanding of people and relationships, ability to help other people without one's own ego getting in the way. These shifts in strengths result in many older workers choosing to devote more of their efforts to supervising, administering, advising, and teaching. For instance, my older lawyer friends spend less time in court, more time mentoring younger lawyers. And my older surgeon friends spend less time doing long or complex operations and more time training young physicians. The problem for society as a whole is to use older people for what they are good at and like to do, rather than requiring them to continue to put in the 60-hour work weeks of ambitious young workers, or else going to the opposite extreme of stupidly imposing policies of mandatory retirement at some arbitrary age. The challenge for older people themselves is to be introspective, to notice the changes in themselves, and to find work utilizing the talents that they now possess. Devising new living conditions for our elderly, appropriate to the changing modern world, remains a major challenge for our society. Many past societies made better use of their elderly and gave them better lives than we do today. We can surely find better solutions now.
Crawford Logan was reading The World Until Yesterday by Jared Diamond. The book was abridged by Robin Brooks and the producer was Christine Cameron. The shipping forecast is next here on BBC Radio 4, and to take us there, it's sailing by. And now the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 on Friday the 22nd of March 2013. There are warnings of gales in Forties, Cromarty, Forth, Tyne, Dogger, Fisher, German Bight, Humber, Thames, Trafalgar, Fitzroy, Sole, Lundy, Fastnet, Irish Sea, Shannon, Rockall, Malin, Hebrides, Bailey, Fair Isle, Faroes and South East Iceland. The general synopsis at 1800. Low, 50 miles west of Seoul, 977, expected 200 miles west of Seoul, 972, by 1800 tomorrow. The area forecasts for the next 24 hours. Viking, north at Sera, southerly or southeasterly 5 to 7, perhaps scale 8 later.